Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Good evening, America. Welcome to Dialogue. The topic today is one that you probably already have an opinion on. It has been an explosive topic across the nation. It's the arrest of the distinguished Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. outside his own home. Now, this is a subject that cuts personally for me because, well, I used to live in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'll talk about that. But basically, I want to spend this hour going and giving you the inside scoop on exactly what happened. You probably know some of the facts. Some of you may know all of the facts, but there's even been new facts that have come out. And I'm going to do everything from playing the 911 tape, as scratchy as it is, to some of the radio dispatch back and forth. And we'll read from the police report. We'll read from Gates's view. We'll try to understand what really happened. And then we need to, of course, explore the larger questions of race and class, community police relations, and whether the president did the right thing in talking about it and then later backing off a bit. All of these things are, of course, things I want you to discuss with me on Dialogue. The number's 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. If you're a regular listener of Dialogue, you know me, Mark Levine. I am part of the Raucous Caucus. Terry DeKester, Garland Nixon, and I go at it each and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. We talk about the issues of the week, and we can be quite boisterous in giving our opinions. But we decided long ago that once a month, on the last Tuesday of the month, we would each individually take over the show, and that would give you a chance, really, to call in, to let your voice be heard, to get to know each of us individually a little bit, so that you know kind of who we are and where we come from when we reach that raucous caucus. As I said, my name is Mark Levine, and I attended Harvard University. I lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, both on campus and off. In fact, Dr. Gates's house is about as close to the campus as you can get. You don't believe me? Just Google it right there. I've been on his street, on Ware Street, and I'm well aware of the Harvard police, the Cambridge police, and how things go down there. It's an area where basically people are very liberal. In fact, I think 88% of Cambridge residents voted for the president. After all, Massachusetts is a fairly liberal state, and Harvard is a fairly liberal place within it. But it's a place that, like every other place in the country, has its race problems and has its mistrust between the police and the residents, particularly between the police and African-American residents. What I want to do is go through the facts of the case, what we know, what we don't know. Some of the things are undisputed. Some of the things are. And I'm going to give you both Professor Gates's view and the police officer's view. But it should be clear that, well, I have a bias in this, and that is that I have been aware of Dr. Gates's writings and work for quite some time. He is, of course, the eminent chairman of the prestigious African-American Studies Department at Harvard. And when I took a couple of classes there in the African-American Studies Department in literature and in history, and he was very well respected way back then. He's perhaps even more respected now. And you should know, if you don't know already, that Henry Louis Gates Jr. is not known as a flamethrower. There are certainly professors, Cornel West perhaps comes to mind, who is known to say very provocative things and is respected for that as well. But Dr. Gates was always someone who was relatively quiet and used his writings, his research, and his voice to talk about race in America, to be sure. But he was never seen as a particularly, shall we say, loud and angry man. The reason I bring that up is because, of course, in the police report that I will be reading to you, he is described that way. Now, I wasn't there, you weren't there, none of us were there. Only, I guess, Professor Gates and Sergeant Crowley and a few of the other police officers and other witnesses know exactly what happened. But I examine this much as I would a legal case. I'm an ex-trial lawyer, and I look at the facts from both witnesses' perspectives and try to determine exactly what happened. So let's go through the facts, and then I definitely want to hear from you your thoughts on all of this. It began, I guess you could say, quite innocently enough, with a woman who reported what could have been a possible break-in. In fact, it appears now that was a break-in. Dr. Gates was in China. In fact, he'd come back. I'm sure he was a bit jet-lagged from a very long trip to China and very glad to be home. And he said that he comes back home. He tries to get his front door. It is jammed. probably jam, frankly, from that break-in that occurred while he was in China that appears to have happened. He tries to get in the front door. He cannot. He goes through the back, unlocks the door with his keys, turns off the alarm, comes into the front, and then his driver, who apparently is a large Moroccan man, helps him barge the door open and bring his suitcases inside. And so all of that happens before, I guess, the story begins, before the police officer arrives on the scene. And in fact, Dr. Gates is in his house talking with the Harvard real estate people who own his house or who rent his house. I'm not sure their connection. The people who I guess he's renting his house. But in any case, he's talking with them about fixing the door and what happened when he receives a knock, or maybe not even a knock, a word from a white police officer outside. Now, the officer, Sergeant Crowley, was called to the scene by a woman who apparently was walking by, was near a neighbor. She herself has been criticized quite a bit. She's been criticized because in the police report that Sergeant Crowley wrote, he writes that she said that what appeared to be on the door, let me read this, the woman is Lucille Whalen, and again, according to Sergeant Crowley's police report, he says that she told him that she observed what appeared to be two black males with backpacks on the porch, and she said her suspicions were aroused when she observed one of the men wedging his shoulder to try to get in. Well, now, subsequent to the police report, we have the actual 911 tapes. We can hear exactly what Ms. Whalen told the dispatch. And I think it's very interesting in terms of, well, both her presuppositions and the police officers. Now, I have to warn you, it is scratchy. I apologize for that. This is a 911 tape that they edited at 911 and then was edited again by the Boston Globe and then was edited again by myself for airing here. So I apologize for the scratchiness of it, but listen close to the words and then we'll talk about it after it's done.
911 Lawrence, recorded with the exact location of your emergency.
Hi, I'm street in Cambridge and the house number is 17. Where street?
What's the phone number you called me from?
I'm calling you from my cell phone number.
Tell me something exactly what happened.
I don't know what's happening. I just had an older woman standing here, and she had noticed two gentlemen trying to get in a house at that number, 17 Ware Street. And they kind of had to barge in, and they broke the screen door, and they finally got in. And when I hadn't looked, I went further, closer to the house a little bit after the gentlemen were already in the house. I noticed two suitcases. So I'm not sure if these are two individuals who actually work there, I mean, who live there.
You think they might have been breaking?
I don't know, because I have no idea. I just noticed.
You think the possibility might have been there? What do you mean by botched in? Did they kick the door in?
No, they were pushing the door in, like the screen part of the front door was kind of like cut.
The door itself with the lock?
I didn't see a key or anything because I was a little bit away from the door, but I did notice that they pushed there.
And what do
these
suitcases have to do with anything?
I don't know. I'm just saying that's what I saw.
What they broke into?
No, they're just the first floor. I don't even think that it's an apartment. It's 17 Ware Street. It's a house. It's a yellow house. Number 17. I don't know if they live there and they just had a hard time with their key, but I did notice that they kind of used their a shoulder to try to barge in, and they got in. I don't know if they had a key or not, because I couldn't see from my angle. But, you know, when I looked a little closely, that's when I saw...
Hispanic.
Are
they still in the house?
They're still in the house, I believe, yeah.
Are they white, black, or Hispanic?
Well, there were two larger men. One looked kind of Hispanic, but I'm not really sure. And the other one entered, and I didn't see what he looked like at all. I just saw her from a distance, and this older woman was worried, thinking someone's breaking in someone's house, they've been barging in, and she interrupted me, and that's when I had noticed. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have noticed it at all, to be honest with you. So I was just calling because she was a concerned neighbor, I guess.
Okay. Are you standing outside?
I'm standing outside, yes.
All right, we'll place her on the way. You can meet them when they get there. What's your name?
Yeah, my name is...
All right, we're on the way.
Okay. All right, I guess I'll wait. Thanks.
Okay, so you heard the 911 tape, and I think that those who've criticized this woman are wrong. I think the woman, it's very interesting. She doesn't mention the race of the men, who she calls gentlemen. She says that there are two suitcases out there. She says twice she's not sure if they live there or not. It is the police officer or the dispatcher who raises the possibility of them breaking in. She says it is a possibility. He asks her, what do the suitcases have to do with it? She says, well, I don't know. They're just there. I would think trained police officer might consider the fact that I don't know. I mean, I guess you could break in with suitcases, but it does suggest the possibility that someone is just coming home. It is the police officer that raises the issue of race, and he raises it twice. He asks her. She doesn't respond. He asks her again, white, black, or Hispanic. She says, I think one of them might have been Hispanic, but I'm not sure. So how is it that from this conversation we get a police report where— and this is a direct quote from the police report written by Sergeant Crowley. He writes that he observed Lucia Whalen. Whalen was standing on the sidewalk in front of the residence, held a wireless telephone in her hand, and told me it was she who called. She went on to tell me that she observed what appeared to be two black males with backpacks on the porch of Ware Street. Now, here's the deal. After the police officer arrived, the men were already in the home. Actually, it was just Dr. Gates that was in the home. Apparently, his driver left. If she didn't know the race of the men when they got in the home when she called, she couldn't have known the race of the men later when she talked to the police officer. So I think the first thing we're learning from this, and for many of us, this isn't a great lesson, but it is for some Americans, it is that police reports are not always accurate. That it may— they're written after the fact by police officers, and he may have recalled it differently from the way it happened. That's important because when we get to the question of he said, the things that Crowley says happened one way and Gates said happened the other way, well, we know that Crowley, at least, is not being entirely truthful. Now, maybe he is a liar, maybe he's a racist, or maybe he's just forgetful. And let's face it, whenever you have a conflict, two people often remember it differently. They remember it in their own sort of self-serving way. But we know for a fact that he's not the most careful officer in the world. So he goes up and he knocks on the door. And these facts, both Professor Gates and the police officer, Sergeant Crowley, agree with. They agree that Sergeant Crowley asked him to step outside, and Professor Gates refused. Professor Gates, from his point of view, was thinking, here's this large white cop. I don't want to step outside. I don't trust the guy. Instead, I'll go inside and show him my ID that I live here. We know that Sergeant Crowley asked Professor Gates, who else lives here? Who else is home? And Gates appears to have responded something like, that's none of your business. Again, look at the issue from the perspective of the two men. Gates is thinking, hey, I live here. Get out of my home. Everything's fine. You don't need to know all these things. And the cop is thinking, well, this is standard procedure. I ask someone to step outside, and then I find out if anyone lives here. He later went on to say that this is standard police procedure because the idea is if someone has broken in the home, perhaps even the homeowner doesn't know that person is there, and they usually check out the home and go. That, by the way, was confirmed. There's a Washington Post article. It was actually a white man who had that happen to him, not in Cambridge. I don't remember where that incident was, but his alarm went off at 2 in the morning, and the police arrived and asked him to step outside and asked him if anyone else was there. So, but Professor Gates, having written a lot about these kinds of things, was understandably concerned, and he went and he got his ID. And it's undisputed that Professor Gates gave the sergeant his Harvard ID. Now, according to Professor Gates, he gave him his driver's license as well, showing unequivocally that he lives there. Sergeant disputes, or at least doesn't include in the police report, whether or not he gave him his driver's license. But again, it seems more likely here that the professor is telling the truth, because in any case, we know that from radio dispatches that Sergeant Crowley knew who was in the house, Henry Louis Gates Jr., knew that he claimed to be a resident, and knew that when he left the scene. Now, he does say in the radio dispatches that the professor— well, he doesn't say professor. He says that the resident, I think he uses the word the resident, is uncooperative. And I'm certain that Professor Gates was not happy that that officer was there. But listen to the dispatches, because it's clear, absolutely clear, that the cop knows who this guy is and that he claims to be a resident. And even if, and I think Gates showed him his driver's license, but even if he didn't, he's got the Harvard ID. It's very, very easy to check with Harvard, check with the Harvard police, and find out that this guy is who he says he is. Indeed, once you got his name and his resident, how hard is it to go on your police scanner and check that the guy actually lives there? I don't think it's very hard at all. Listen to the radio dispatch, because I think it's very clear that at the time the officer leaves the scene, he knows who Henry Louis Gates is.
Respond to 17 Weir Street for a possible BD in progress. Two SPs barge their way into the home. They have suitcases, 17 Weir Street. Both SPs are still in the house, unknown on race. One may be a Hispanic male, I'm not sure. Single family yellow house.
Can you have the caller come to the front door?
Her house, she doesn't live there. She's a witness in this.
A month later, a gentleman says he resides here. We'll not cooperate, but keep the cars coming. Can you also stop the Harvard University police this way?
We can send him in.
I have an idea of Henry Louis Gates. He gave you the name of the resident, Henry Louis Gates, Jr.?
No, I want...
The Harvard property.
Oh, there you go. The name of the resident, Henry Louis Gates, Jr., Harvard property. So it's absolutely clear, no matter who you believe in this incident, that the police officer knows who's in the house, that he claims to be a resident, he knows his name. He's got a picture ID. Now, as far as I'm concerned, it should have ended there and then. But the next part, perhaps, is the most interesting part and perhaps the most disputed part. Professor Gates insists that he was respectful. He does say that he asked for the police officer's ID three separate times, that the police officer refused to give any ID, and that he walked outside the house and asked another police officer, because there were several there and witnesses, to get the Sergeant Crowley's name and badge number, and that's when he was arrested. The sergeant has a different point of view in the police report. He goes on to say that Gates was yelling, accusing him of being a racist police officer, saying to get the chief, what's the chief's name, and that he had no idea who he was messing with. The sergeant also says, and Professor Gates hotly denies this, that when he asked the professor to step outside, and this is a direct quote from the police report, the sergeant writes, "My reason for wanting to leave the residence was that Gates was yelling very loud, and the acoustics of the kitchen and the foyer were making it difficult for me to transmit pertinent information to responding units." Gates' reply was, "Yeah, I'll speak with your mama outside." Gates hotly denies, well, not hotly, but he does deny that he said that. As Gates said in a later interview, "I weigh 150 pounds and I'm 5'7". I'm not going to give flack to a big white guy with a gun. I might wolf later, but I won't wolf then." In any case, according to the police officer, that Gates continued to yell at him out on the sidewalk. There were people outside and citizens, and that he warned that he would be arrested and then arrested him. So, what really happened here? In my opinion, what happened here was two men, both aware of their power, were upset that their power was being challenged. Now, the cop had the greater power. He, unfortunately, has a badge and a gun, and no matter how wrong he is, whether he lied on the police report or not, he is someone that, well, people have to listen to, whether you like it or not. And yet Gates appears, at least, to have done that. He says all he wanted to do was get his badge number. Now, we don't know who was yelling what. Gates does admit that at one point he did say, "This is what happens to black men in America." And you see that when two people are disagreeing with each other, each is going to take away from them what they will. It does appear that the police officer tricked Professor Gates into coming outside, because you can't arrest someone for disorderly conduct for yelling at a cop in your own home. There was, you know, Gates was not threatening the cop in any way. He certainly was no physical threat. He was upset. So the cop sort of lured him outside, and that's when he arrested him. For all any fault that might be attributed to the professor, and listen, we don't know exactly what happened. Let's say the police officer's right. Let's say that Gates raised his voice. And again, Gates denies this, and I believe Gates. But even if the police officer is right, Even if Gates raised his voice, the police officer had no business arresting him. The police officer had proof that he was a resident of the house, that he was in his own home, that a mistake had been made. And again, I don't think anyone blames or should blame the person who called in. I don't think she was doing anything wrong. In fact, Professor Gates has praised her as saying, you know, we want to look out for break-ins in the neighborhood. But after that, the police officer had to walk away. And even if it's true, and I don't know that it is, but even if it's true that Professor Gates was yelling at him, a police officer should have thick skin. He should say, I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry this happened. We were looking at a break-in, and walk away. And that would have diffused it, right? Or maybe have one of the other police officers talk calmly to Professor Gates. I think this was a case of, well, let's just call it what it is, masculinity off. The cop felt that his authority was being challenged. He was being challenged because he was being called a racist. He was being challenged because this was being done in public, where a bunch of officers and fellow citizens were out there watching. And he wanted to take charge. He wanted to show that he was the real man. He was in charge. Professor Gates also, I'm sure, no question, felt violated. His own home was there. He is a Harvard professor. He is a highly, highly respected man. And he wanted to get the officer's badge number. He wanted to find out what was going on. He wasn't going to back down. And so I guess this is how I see the incident, and then I definitely want to hear from you. Whether or not, whatever happened, and again, we're never going to know probably exactly what happened. I do hope the Cambridge police are going to do a full investigation. Hopefully the Cambridge mayor's office and so forth will too. Whatever Gates did, let me be clear, it's not smart to mouth off to a cop. I think Professor Gates knows that. He says he knows that. So that's why I don't think it happened. But let's be clear. Even a bad cop, even a racist cop, it's just not smart to mouth off with a guy to a gun, with a guy with a gun. You just don't do that. I think that many of us, I think all of us, probably have been stopped by the police at one time or another, and many times stopped wrongly. And the smart thing to do, if you can, is simply, you know, get their number, get their you can get the number on top of the car, by the way. If you can't get their badge number, get the number on top of their car. And then once they've left, after you're nice to the officer and everything, then you call in, file a complaint, file a lawsuit if you have to, go after them. But the mistake of mouthing off to a cop, if that's what happened, is far, far, far less than what the police officer did. What the police officer did was go into a man's home and go in, you know, with good cause. But once he went in and once he found out that Professor Gates lived in that home, it's over. Well, it's over. He knows everything's okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a distinguished Harvard professor. It could be anybody in that house, white or black, calm or angry. I don't care what they're yelling. The police officer knows there's no crime. Once he knows there's no crime, he's done. That's it. File a report if you want. But there's no reason for that police officer to be there. And he walked home. He was leaving. And I don't care if a man comes out the door and shouts whatever invective at him. There was no threat. You leave it alone. Maybe you ask another officer to step in. I'm confident that if the officer had walked back to his car, Dr. Gates would have walked into his home, maybe even slammed the door, and this whole thing would be over. Obviously, this incident is bigger than what happened in Cambridge, Massachusetts, because every day, as President Obama has pointed out, black and brown people are stopped more often than white people in America, and they're stopped for sometimes no reason at all. And Obama pointed out that this was separate and apart from the incident. He said he didn't know all the facts of the incident, but that racial profiling is a major concern in America, and it should be. And there's no question in my mind that Professor Gates, having written about all of this, having studied all of this, having looked at the statistics on all of this, felt it very personally. And that's very understandable. So what did the president say? And the president later got in trouble for this. The president said, now, this is a direct quote from the press conference. He writes, the police are called. They're doing what they should. They go investigate. My understanding is at that point, Professor Gates is already in his house. The police officer comes in. I'm sure there's some exchange of words. But my understanding is that Professor Gates then shows his ID to show that it is his house. And at that point, he gets arrested for disorderly conduct, charges which are later dropped. This is all a direct quote from the president. Now, I don't know, not having been there and not seeing all the facts, what role race played in that. But I think it's fair to say, number one, any of us would be pretty angry. Number two, that the Cambridge police acted stupidly in arresting somebody when there was already proof they were in their own home. And number three, what I think we know separate and apart from this incident is that there is a long history in this country of African-Americans, Latinos, being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately. That's just a fact. Now, the president was criticized for those words, and he later on backed down a little from them. But I'm not sure what he's backing down from. I agree with what he said originally. Number one, I think anyone would be angry. Number two, they acted stupidly in arresting someone in their own home. Is that really in dispute? That was a stupid thing? Even if the cops had legal authority to do it, that was a stupid thing to do? That is not what we want police officers doing? That it wasn't smart? That it wasn't correct? It wasn't right? I mean, disorderly conduct is this wide idea. You know, it's this very, very large concept. You can arrest anyone who's being emotional or distressed. In fact, the cop may have lured him outside his home to do just that. But clearly, it was a stupid thing to do. In fact, stupid was one of the nicer things Obama said. He didn't call the cop racist. He said it was stupid. I think it was. It'll be interesting to see when Professor Gates and Sergeant Crowley and President Obama all get together for a beer on Thursday, if Gates and Crowley shake hands and if they can make it up. I think that the cop was basically pushed in a corner in his own mind. Felt that he had to be macho. He had to show the stuff. And that's why he acted, and I know Professor Gates felt pushed in a corner. And it seems to me that we've got to find out a way to make sure that this kind of stuff stops happening in America, or at least is dampened way down. Now, I want to hear from you. 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with your take on the situation completely. I mean, once the cop saw who lived in the house, he should have said, okay, thank you, sir, goodbye, regardless of whether or not he's screaming obscenities or whatever. And the cop, even the next day, I believe he was on some talking head show where he said if he had just quieted down, he wouldn't have been arrested.
Now, that is what the cop said.
Yeah, that's what he said. And so that is a, you know, that's a sure indication that the cop, you know, is in agreement with the fact that he knew it was the professor, but the reason he took him in was because he wouldn't shut up.
And isn't this just sort of a macho thing where the cop is saying, hey, you know, I'm in charge here, don't mouth off to me kind of thing, which is not, by the way, it's not illegal to mouth off to a cop. I've said it's stupid. It's not smart to mouth off to a cop, but it's not illegal to do that.
That's right. I don't think it's a macho thing. I think it's a cops nowadays, and we see it all over, people getting tased and, I mean, it's a nonstop affair where cops think that they have the right. Unless you kneel down and kiss his boots, then you're going to be messed with. And if you don't do what the cop says when he says it, then you're going to get taken to jail or fined or whatever. And the entire public is okay with that, it appears.
If you got, well, I don't know the entire public.
Wants to make Obama force him to apologize, because cops can do no wrong.
Yeah, there are people who, I'm not saying the entire public, there are people who you're right, agree with that. I think many of us are very upset by this. Let me ask you this, Andy. If Professor Gates were a white Harvard professor, do you think, and had done exactly the same thing that Gates did, right? You know, show who he is, but be very upset, let's say. Do you think that the same thing would have happened?
Probably not. But if it was a white guy who, you know, didn't look like a professor, it would have gone the same way. You cannot. They think they're gods, and they think that anybody that mouths off to a police officer deserves to be, you know, dealt with.
I hear you, Andy, and I agree. We've got to take a break, and there's a bunch more callers on the line. We will get to you in just a moment. 202-588-0893. Back after this.
A coalition in support of single-payer national health care and improved Medicare for all descends on Capitol Hill for a day of lobbying and a rally this Thursday, July 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. at Upper Senate Park. The coalition includes the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Health Care, Physicians for a National Health Program, Public Citizen, and others. Join WPFW as we broadcast live from 1 to 3 p.m. with patients who share their stories as well as other speakers. Again, it's this Thursday, July 30th from 1 to 3 p.m. right here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Welcome back to the show. Again, there's lots of you calling in to talk about this. 202-580-8893. We will go right to the phones. Let's hear from, is it RJ who's up next? RG. No, Mary. I'm sorry. Mary, you're on the line.
Hi.
Hi there. What are your thoughts on the arrest of Professor Gates and all this?
I think three questions remain even after all the hoopla, and I think I have an answer to both.
Okay.
One is, why was Professor Gates arrested? And the other is, why were the charges dismissed? The answer to the first, I think, is fairly easy if we look at who was there. Once Professor Gates was on the porch, was outside the residence, the police officer was in front of his either colleagues or subordinates, at least one of whom was black. We've seen him in the picture. And another was Hispanic, according to some reports. And this is where race enters. Was this white guy, who's an expert on race relations, going to let a black and a Latino person, see him mouthed off to by a black man? I don't think so. I think if Professor Gates had been one of the other prominent Gates in our news these days, Bill or Robert, he wouldn't have been arrested because Crowley could have stood it to have those others see him ranked by a white man, especially a white professional of great standing in the community, but not by a black or a Latino. The answer to the other question is the charges were dismissed because they were inappropriate in the first place, as you have already outlined quite carefully and I think correctly.
Yeah, no, they were clearly inappropriate. I do think that there was a saving face, if you will, moment, that the cop did not like to be dressed down. I do think that part of it may even be the fact that he was a Harvard professor. You know, Cambridge, there is conflict in places like Cambridge between, they call it the town and the gowns. Here you have a working class community and a very prestigious university, and there's conflict, and I would think that the cop wouldn't want to be dressed down by anyone. But you may well be right. Being dressed down by a black man, even a Harvard professor, may for him have been more insulting than it was. It should be noted that there is another. You mentioned the Hispanic officer. There is another incident report that has been filed by an officer named Carlos Figueroa. It's much shorter than Sergeant Crowley's report, but since you raise it, I will read from part of it. He says that when he arrived, Sergeant Crowley had already been in the house and was speaking to Professor Gates, and that he stepped in the house. He heard Sergeant Crowley ask the gentleman's information, and he heard back, "No, I will not," Sergeant Figueroa writes in all caps, he says the gentleman was shouting to the sergeant. The sergeant was racist. And this is what happens to black men in America, and you don't know who you were messing with. And the gentleman refused to listen as to why the Cambridge police were there. Now, again, I think a lot of this is cops defending each other. If we've learned one thing from the Thin Blue Line, it's that it's very unlikely that a cop is going to dispute the word of another police officer, and I think that's too bad. I do think there are, let me just say right out at the outset, there are many honest cops who will do the right thing. I am not saying that all cops are racist or all cops are bad, but I do know there is a tendency among people in law enforcement to protect each other. They got to work with these people day to day. They may have to, risk taking a bullet and having some guy on their back. They want to make sure these people are on their side. So I don't know. It's interesting. It'd be interesting if they interviewed Sergeant Figueroa. I haven't seen him being interviewed at all about the incident. Let's go on to Yvonne. Yvonne, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's been a long wait, but hey, it's okay. There are a couple of things missing in the news reports about the incident with Professor Gates at Harvard. He had identified himself before he went in his house. He identified himself to the policeman. What was the policeman doing following him into his house? And once he got into Professor Gates' house, Professor Gates, of course, was in his own territory and had a right to ask the police officer for his name and his badge number, because the policeman should not have been in his house without a warrant, as I understand it. However, I agree generally with what you said, but some missing information. Keep your eye on the missing information in the news.
Well, I agree with you that that is missing.
Okay, I'm going to listen to the radio.
Thank you, and I appreciate your call. Let me first address the legal issue which you raised, which is whether the police officer had a right to be in his house. Until Professor Gates showed the police officer his ID, I actually think it's undisputed the police officer did have a right to be in the house. He was called regarding a possible breaking and entering. He sees a man in the house. He goes to check to see what's going on. The man could have been breaking and entering for all the police officer knew. Well, let's give him credit, at least at the outset. And you don't need a warrant to investigate a crime in progress. You do need a warrant under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution when to get evidence of a crime after it's already occurred. When there's a crime in progress, you don't have to go to a judge. I mean, if a cop sees a drug deal going on or someone being shot or harmed or beaten up or whatever, or a breaking and entering, the cop can immediately go and investigate. Does not need a warrant. But you're absolutely right that once Professor Gates shows him his ID, it's over. The legal authority for the police officer to be in that house is over. Now, many cops do ask people to precautions. In other words, they will say, and these things tend to occur in the middle of the night. I've been reading a lot about police officers called to breaking and entering. They tend to occur about 2 in the morning. And police officers will often say to the resident, why don't I check out the rest of the house to see who's there, just in case someone could be there hiding in the closet or something. It's for your own safety. And oftentimes the residents agree. Professor Gates did not agree. He said, in pretty clear terms, get out of my house. Here's my ID. Leave. And the caller is absolutely right that at that point he should have left. Now, in terms of his ID, of Gates asking the police officer his ID, there is a discrepancy there. Professor Gates says he asked the officer his identification 3 times. 3 times was not given an answer, and finally went on the porch to ask one of the other officers to get the cop's ID. Sergeant Crowley says he told Gates who he was, but Gates wasn't listening because he was yelling all the time. I happen to think that's a self-serving thing in the police officer's report, but again, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened. If you are ever stopped by a police officer, you can usually look and get the badge number yourself, and I wouldn't tell the police officer you're doing it because, as we've seen, it can make them very angry. Just look at it, memorize it. As soon as the police officer's gone, write it down. If you see a police car, that's often easier because they'll have those big numbers above. All the cars are registered to one of the police officers. Get the car number. You don't have to get the license number, although that's nice. Just get the number on the front of the car. You should definitely know how to identify a police officer, and it's usually better to do so without asking them because, that tends to anger them, as we've seen. Let's go to the next caller, Dennis. Dennis, welcome to the show.
You have so much information that's incorrect. I really don't know where to begin. Let me just start with this. You said once his ID was shown, there are people who have relationships that break off and the person has an ID that they live in the house, but there's a stay-away order or they're going through a divorce or they're temporarily not staying there. So
okay.
If someone shows you an ID that has an address on it, doesn't mean that they have a legal right to be there. So even though they show an ID, you still have to check and make sure there's not a stay-away or a domestic.
Okay, Dennis, let me clarify. This was a case of breaking and entering. If it were a case of domestic violence, you're absolutely right. If there were, a stay-away order, if there's a question of a crime going on inside in the house by a lawful resident, again, domestic violence would be the clearest example.
You've never heard of someone getting locked up on Thursday for domestic and breaking back in the house on Friday?
No, I understand that. I understand that. But what I'm saying is that the only claim was breaking and entering. So what he should do is he could check and see that there's no one that has a – Henry Louis Gates is not wanted for any stay-away order or domestic violence order. He should certainly check his computer.
So even though he has an ID
with
his license with his address on it, he still has to check. Plus, there are instances, and I've had this happen, where someone has had a relationship that broke off and a boyfriend breaks in and hides in the closet and tells the resident – who has an ID, to tell the police that nothing's wrong. And the person's hiding right in the closet, and then you don't find out until you push a little further. Because the person is telling you, no, everything's okay, but the guy with the knife is sitting right there in the closet. Now, one other thing you said it was very easy for him to just go on the scanner with the Harvard Police Department and verify Professor Gates lives there. Well, this is just another example where you don't know what you're talking about. No offense.
Okay.
But you can't talk on a scanner. A scanner is a communication device where you can listen to frequencies. He can go on his police radio, but if the police radio is not linked to the Harvard police radio, he would have to call his dispatcher and have the dispatcher call the Harvard dispatcher, and then they don't keep records of where everyone lives and who they are. The officer went there to do his job. He was called to do there. You know, let's discuss the profiling part.
I want to talk with you further. Let me just ask you this before you get to the profiling, and I'll give you a chance. Let me ask you about what you just said. Why couldn't, once he found out the name and he sees a Harvard ID and he sees, you know, a 58-year-old man who's a professor, it's got the Harvard ID, why couldn't he back away from the house, do these investigations? I'm not saying leave the residence, but I'm not saying leave the premises, but go out to the front yard, check. You know, call. I mean, we see that he's already called in the Harvard police. Check all these things. Find out if the guy lives there. There was no indication of any domestic violence or anything in this particular case at all. Do that without escalating it and without it causing the problem it did.
All right, very simple. All right, I go to a house and the resident tells me they live there. All right, I go back outside to verify the information. They close the door. They slaughter the family in the basement.
Okay, but
I go back to the door, can't get in, and my supervisor shows up and says, "Why'd you leave the house? Why'd you leave the house and give the person the opportunity to close the door once you got inside?" Until you know for sure who lives there and that there is no stay-away order, and they're not telling you nothing's wrong under distress because they caught the person breaking in, you have to verify to cover your behind. I have had a woman tell me nothing was wrong while her husband, who she shot, was laying behind the door. I've had another woman tell me nothing was wrong while her boyfriend was hiding in the closet. I had a sister of a police officer call her police officer sister to complain that I was there while her boyfriend was in the closet. You have to verify because you're civilly liable.
Let me ask you this. Now, Dennis, you raised some good issues. I will get to your profiling question, I promise, in a second. You're interesting. You're definitely a police officer, correct?
Right. And what I'm trying to tell you is this.
When you came in, the three that you mentioned, these horrific instances that you named, were they all calls from women claiming some domestic violence problem?
No, one was a call for sounds of gunshots in the house. That was a woman who shot her husband behind the door. One was a call for someone banging on a door. When we got there, there was no one at the door, but we knocked on the door to make sure they didn't gain entry. And the lady told me that no one was there, everything was okay. And one of the training films you ask the person, like, well, if everything's okay, just say the number. If something's wrong, say the number 9. And the lady said 9. So we knew something was wrong. And in the background, I saw a closet door move.
Okay.
So there's 100 things going on. But the bottom line is, if you leave there and there is something wrong, the last chance the person had to possibly save themselves, you close the door on it. But I want to talk to you about the profiling thing in a second. All right. Remember, this gentleman received the police officer. Most police officers will tell you they don't make disorderly lockups. And I'll tell you why. And I'm not going to give you specifics, but let's say I have 6,000 arrests and 20 are disorderly. A disorderly is a breach of the peace. You said a person could not be locked up once they showed their ID and they left. The officer left the premises and the professor came outside. There was no reason to make an arrest.
I didn't say there was no legal. I understand disorderly conduct. I understand that he had a right to lock up the cop,
to lock up the professor,
but he was wrong to do so.
The officer has the option of walking away. I agree with that. But let's say that the officer attended, you know, community meetings that week and crack down on the students who are drinking and raising hell, excuse the language, or whatever the case may be. And the officer has been told this, and the officer goes there, he leaves, and the guy comes out, and I'm not saying this happened, and he uses profanity, a light comes on, it creates a crowd. Well, that's a breach of the peace. If they don't want breach of the peace enforced, it's up to the citizens of that community to take that law off the books.
But do you think that the cop, in this case where he finds out and apparently was willing to walk away, that everything's okay, that this is the man in the house, that his anger is entirely due to the police officer being there and not due to any, you know, drinking or parties or domestic violence or anything like that. Do you think Sergeant Crowley acted right in this case?
I can't say he acted right or wrong. What I can say is he acted on probable cause. Every officer acts on probable cause. If Professor Gates, if whoever gives the, I tell my kids when they drive, if you get pulled over, yes, just like Chris Rock says in his comedy, you be polite, you know, because, you know, what are the chances that you're not going to get a ticket if you start cussing at the officer right away? You know, it's just human nature. Does the officer have to give the ticket? Does he have to make the arrest? Not necessarily. But if there's a citizen standing there and this guy's, you know, acting foolish out in public and creating a breach of the peace where you turn and the light comes on or a crowd forms, well, the gentleman just gave the officer the option of making the arrest. So all I'm saying is this, from, you know, and I guarantee you I'm a very, very experienced officer. I've walked away from 99.9% of the people. This is not worth the hassle after the fact. Oh, I wasn't drunk. Oh, I wasn't disorderly. I wasn't standing in the middle of a highway. If I leave and the person gets run over by a car, what's the first thing they say? Why didn't you make the person get out of the street? I tried to make them get out of the street. They wouldn't listen. Well, then why didn't you lock them up? Because then I would have got sued for locking them up for disorderly. So the officers don't want to make disorderly arrests. It's just a pain in the behind. But let's go racial profiling for a minute.
Okay, real quick.
All right. And I want to get off the air so you can get other callers. Officers who see other officers do wrong, they don't want to associate with them. They don't back every officer up like you say, because you know what? We know which officers do what they're not supposed to do, and I don't want to be on the law. I don't want to be in the lawsuit. I'm not going to be. I distance myself, and we all distance ourselves from those officers because we don't want to be part of the lawsuit. That's the way it is. That's the real blue line. Now, racial profiling. Do you understand for it to be truly racial profiling, he would have had to have driven past a door with a white guy forcing it open with a shoulder, a Chinese guy forcing it open the shoulder, and then on his fourth one come to a house and say, well, let me go up here and hassle this guy because I'm going to profile him. I just passed these other three. He was called there. Now, that doesn't mean profiling doesn't happen, but it doesn't apply to this case. And if what happened is Gates, you know, for whatever reason, apparently got mad, the officer made an arrest. If we were to ask Gates, if you hadn't gone outside and raised your voice because you were mad, would you have got arrested? And he would say no.
Well, now wait a minute, Dennis here. The police officer asked Professor Gates to go outside. He said, I want you to go outside. Gates initially refused, says, I don't want to go outside. So here you have Gates, apparently, you know, and again, we don't know how upset he was. We are taking Crowley's word for it. I hope we learn more on Thursday when they're having a beer here. I don't know that it was near as contentious as it was. One of the people I'd like to hear from personally and who has not spoken is the witnesses, the non-police officer witnesses who apparently were outside on the doorstep. I'd like to know the extent to which Professor Gates was yelling and screaming, as Crowley said. But I still think at the end of the day that no matter what Gates was saying, I think that the police officer could defuse the situation from walking away. And I don't know that you disagree with me too much, although I do think you give a lot of good context to what a police officer is thinking.
You're right. The officer could walk away. Let me add one more thing. Is the when you talk about the officer giving a statement or the officer giving his opinion, you know, a lot of police departments have a public information officer. And part of your general orders is you're not to have conversations with the media. So if there's a question directed to the sergeant, really, in most departments, he has to direct that to a public information officer because if he's sued, they're also suing the city. So
okay.
Anything the sergeant would say is potentially liable to him and the city. So,
and there, who knows? There may be a lawsuit here. I think Cambridge will investigate. Dennis, I want to thank you for your call, and I do need to move on. Let's go to RG. RG, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
Give me a moment.
Turn down the radio. There
yeah,
you go.
That was a bit abrupt. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Good. Yeah, I think that you contended that the Cambridge-Boston area is a liberal area to some extent. Is that what you said?
They certainly vote for Democrats.
Oh, well. Yeah, well, the city experienced conflict starting in the 70s over desegregation busing.
No question about
that. The Roxbury incident, you remember that?
No question about
that.
Yeah,
no, that resulted in a lot of violence and unrest, include the decapitation of a black girl.
And also, I was distinguishing to some extent Cambridge, which is, of course, a small city that's a suburb of the larger Boston.
To that area, or, you know, they're all, you know, in the same general vicinity, wouldn't you say?
Oh, Cambridge borders Boston.
Right, okay. Well, I would say that, you know, where did you get that evidence tape? Because, I mean, that was pretty nice. I don't guess that's privy to the average person.
Well, I got it from, actually, the Boston Globe got it from the 9/11. They did the work. I just replayed it. But it's new, though. But you're right that it's new.
It just great for this show because I tend to agree with the police, and there's probably no one that would be more apt to question the police's position in a situation like this than myself for personal reasons. But the fact that you have to go through a process called premises clearance in this case, where you know you have to make sure that everything is secure and normalized at the residence before you leave it, because of the fact that the stability of the residence was called into question. Don't you agree there?
I agree that's normal police procedure.
Right. Okay. And so objectively, this smacks home of, you know, issues that were raised all the way up to the confirmation of the new Supreme Court justice. How are you going to look at it? But it's done in microcosm. In this case, it's concentrated into a few moments.
But what's interesting here, sir, is that it's not that it's not even in the police report that the reason why Gates was arrested is he refused to allow the police officer to wander the premises. I mean, Dennis made a very good point on that, and I accept that point. I accept the point that you're making. But that's not the reason why Gates was arrested. According to the police report...
Look, I think he was arrested because his conduct extended beyond common sense and discernment, and his mouth escalated the situation.
Well, that may be true. Let me read you the first line of the police report. This is Sergeant Crowley's point of view. He writes, on Thursday, July 16th, Henry Gates Jr. of 17 Ware Street, Cambridge, Massachusetts, was placed under arrest after being observed exhibiting loud and tumultuous behavior in a public place, directed a uniformed police officer who was present investigating a report of a crime in progress. These actions on the behalf of Gates served no legitimate purpose and caused citizens passing by his location to stop and take notice while appearing surprised and alarmed. That's his view. That is his statement.
Okay, okay.
Now,
well,
Gates will tell you.
I agree there, you know, Mr. Levine, but I will say this. All this splitting hairs about everything that happened is one thing, but, I mean, you know, look at Gates' mugshot. He looks just as anthropoid as any other black man or white man or whoever. He's no better or no different than anybody else. And, you know, his one of the things about it is that I found his research documentaries to be flawed by the fact that he keeps constantly trying to prove how white he is.
You know, well, I happen to like
really,
his documentary.
Sort of disarms his intellectual powers, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
you know,
that's a separate issue. I happen to like his work, and
I don't like it, but I mean, you know, he's taking it to you know, like it to a penultimate degree. You know, I think that outside, by virtue of the fact that this could be a conflict of or a clash of civilizations, the officer realized that he was talking to an eminent professor, and the professor decided that he's going to talk down to the police.
Well, I understand
so he
that.
He decided to whittle him down to size.
I agree with you.
Than any of the rest of us.
I think there was a lot of that going on. I think the Harvard professor thought people don't talk to me this way, and the cop thought people don't talk to me this way, and neither one of them wanted to back down. I certainly think that there's a lot of possibility there, but no matter who the man is, it seems to me that once a police officer has satisfied himself that the situation is under control, and remember, the police officer had left the scene, so whether or not he checked the premises or not, he had satisfied himself that the man resided in the home, he had satisfied himself there was no crime being committed, and he was leaving, even if he was faced with a torrent of abuse, and I'm not so sure I accept Sergeant Crowley's word at face value. I understand that. All right, but the police officer has to have a thick skin. He's got to be able to walk away. And it seems to me that all he did was escalate the situation. If he wants, he could get another police officer, perhaps, who wasn't involved, maybe in order to be racially sensitive. If there's an African-American police officer there, he could go in, quiet down the situation since, you know, he's being accused of being racist. But this police officer only escalated the situation. Remember, he was already walking away.
Well, personally, I think that I don't know if Professor Gates is a drinker or not, but he was coming back off vacation. I think he may have been a little bit under the influence to respond the way he did. It doesn't take rocket science for him to figure out, as well as the policeman to figure out, that this is a situation that needed to be pretty much classified as a simple domestic clearance issue and to leave it at that.
Okay,
so,
but
I mean,
RG, just to be clear,
that there was something extraneous to this or tangential to it that caused the professor to act out of his own character.
Here's the thing, RG.
But I like again, I do respect and like Henry Louis Gates, but minus his you know, repeated attempts to try to prove how white he is.
Well, I thank you for your call, RG. Here's the issue. It's first of all, I want to be clear. RG is accepting Crowley's point of view, which was that the professor was yelling and so forth. That is not what Professor Gates said happened. And I don't think we know at this point who's telling the truth here. One of the things I did notice in listening to that radio dispatch is you don't hear loud noises of a man yelling in the background. So at least from the tapes that I played here, there's an indication that perhaps Crowley has exaggerated exactly what's going on. I don't think we know that issue. But what I'm saying is even if Crowley's entirely correct, even if RG is entirely correct, I still think the police officer overreacted. Let's go to Will. Will, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Let me preface my statement by saying that Americans are the greatest people, white, black, Asians and Hispanics. Before I came to this country, I lived in many countries, and I admire America, and I'll put my life down for this country. But I will narrate an incident that happened to me a few years ago. I came to this country, went to school, became a medical doctor. A neighbor of mine died one Saturday night. My wife took me to an upscale neighborhood in Washington, D.C. for a friend of hers to make a wreath because the stores were closed. She wanted me to go up into the house. I said no because it was three women and they were talking. I was very tired after a 24-hour shift, so I was sitting in my car nodding. I saw this guy walking his dog. He looked at me. I was a black guy. He walked behind my car, and within 5 minutes, I saw a police cruiser just charging towards me. First, I didn't think of it, but then he blocked me up and put the light, the bright light, straight into my face. He walked close to my car with his hand on the service weapon, tapped on my glass, and told me to bring my glass down. I wound the glass down. He said, "Do you live here?" I said, "No, sir." He said, "Move." I said, "What do you mean by move?" He said, "Leave this place." I said, "Why? What have I done?" He said, "Well, a citizen called and said you were driving your car up and down in the neighborhood." I said, "Sir, if I'm accused, I think I have a right to meet my accuser." He looked at me, "But what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, my wife is upstairs, and I'm not going to leave. You can kill me or do whatever you want. I will not leave my wife here." After that, he was very polite. He excused himself. I said, "Thank you, sir." And I told him, "Sir, please understand that minorities are not all criminals. I pay taxes, and I know you know who I am, because I've never seen a police officer go in the night to investigate a crime by himself, especially to investigate a black man 9:30 in the night."
I'll tell you this. I'm glad that story had a happy ending. I think the only thing is,
if I may finish, I'm a guy that sends money to police survivors. I send them money regularly because I think they do a great job. And to be honest, the black cops are no better than the white cops. In fact, the black cops are found even more aggressive. They seem to have a low self-esteem, and they would do anything. They would slam you to the ground. I work in a city hospital where I take care of people that have been brutalized by the police. So I know that the white cops in many ways are even more gentle to people than the black cops. And I'm sorry to say as a black man, but that is the truth.
Well, I think the whole thing, as President Obama said, is a teachable moment for us all. And I think the answer is there are good cops and there are bad cops. And that many cops are reputable people who are trying to do their job and, frankly, protect us. I mean, we need police officers. We need them when there are crimes. We need to be able to call them. We need to be able to trust them. We need to be able to give tips when we see dangers in our community. In fact, it appears that Professor Gates' house was broken into before he came home. But I think that the real teachable lesson from this is no matter what, I mean, unless a cop is actually beating you or something. I mean, if a cop is doing something like, the caller just described, asking you very aggressively, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" Just answer the question. Say like this man did, "My wife's upstairs," or "I'm here with a friend," or whatever the truth is, just tell them. And many cops at that point will back down. And no matter how angry you are, no matter how much you feel you're being racially profiled, at the moment with the police officer, when he's got a big gun and everything and handcuffs, you don't want to mess with him. That doesn't mean you shouldn't protect your rights. After it's over, by all means, get the badge number, get the number of the car, call in, complain. Everyone should defend their rights. But at the moment, don't fight with a police officer. It's just not a fight you're going to win. And I think that's the important lesson, even though I firmly believe Sergeant Crowley overreacted, even though I firmly believe that a lesson's been taught here. I'll tell you this. They're not going to apologize. Crowley says he won't apologize. Cambridge Police says they won't apologize. But I like to hope, and maybe I'm just being naive, that somewhere in some back room in Cambridge, Massachusetts, some police chief is giving Sergeant Crowley a good talk about how he overreacted, how he let the professor get under his skin decided to overreact. And I guess the answer is, if you think a cop is racist, by all means, say so later, but don't say it to the cop, to his face. You're likely not to get a good response. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. We will be back next Tuesday with the full Raucous Caucus, Garland Nixon, Kerry Kester, and myself, Mark Levine. I hope you listen to Dialogue every single Tuesday at 7 p.m. We do have a lot of issues to discuss. Terry Kester has his own show, What's at Stake? It's on tomorrow at 10 a.m., and his show is going to be dedicated to how scientific illiteracy threatens our future. His guest is Chris Mooney, the author of the bestseller, The Republican War on Science. Giants. So you won't want to miss that, and you definitely won't want to miss every Tuesday. If you missed any part of this show, it will be on my website, RadioInsideScoop.com. RadioInsideScoop.com. You can download it. You can comment on today's show. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you thought. I want to hear if you think I'm right, wrong, or indifferent. Just send me an email, Mark Levine, WPFW.